Hello and welcome to the Profitable Practice Podcast with me, Andrea Maxim, naturopathic doctor turned healthpreneur. And every week I'm bringing you no nonsense, no BS, actionable strategies to create a practice that is not only profitable, but fully sustainable by you. If you're an action taker like me and want to create a practice that is profitable, then you've come to the right place. Hey, what's up, everyone? It is Andrea with another episode of the Profitable Practice Podcast. And this one was one that I think really needed to be put out there. And we've touched on this topic in previous podcasts, like when I was talking to Priya about SmartND, but also about momhood. I did my own podcast about mom guilt, but I wanted to bring on another person who actually specializes in postnatal care and babies. And she's actually claimed kind of Dr. Mom, which is amazing that that domain was created. And we wanted to have a really frank kind of woman-to-woman conversation about being a female in an entrepreneurial role while still having children. Now, if anybody knows my history with Aria, first and foremost, we weren't planning that one. So that one was a surprise, to say the least. It kind of got my husband and I in gear when it came to getting married. And in fact, we'd only been together about 5 months by this time. Now, I'd always told my girlfriends when I was going to meet my husband, I knew it was going to happen fast. So we would just know. And that's basically what happened with Scott. We met on Plenty of Fish right after my 30th birthday. And the reason why I chose him, I said, this time when I go online, I'm just going to date one person at a time. Because anybody who's dated online, you know that it's very easy to start playing the field because, you know, you have all these messages coming from all these different people. But I said, you know, I really want to just commit to one person. And it was down to two guys. And all I had was their profile picture. And the one guy looked very cute. I wasn't 100% attached to his photo. And then the other guy had a baby tiger in his arms, like literally a baby tiger. And I was like, well, you got to choose the cute guy with the baby tiger, right? So that's how Scott and I had our very first date. And it was the next day we went out for drinks. And from that moment forward, we were inseparable. We started looking for a house after, I think it was like the first month of dating. We bought our first house in September. We moved in on December. That was our closing date, December 15th. And we conceived little Aria about 2 days later. Needless to say, that couch was immediately thrown out of our house because we do not need to have any more oops babies, not in my world. So Aria, as soon as I found out, which was January, I'd just taken my week off in January. I always take after New Year's that whole week off because nobody wants to come into the office anyway. And I knew it. I looked in the mirror and I could see that there were already breast changes. And I was like, damn it, Scott, I think I'm pregnant. And my first thought was, we can't go through with this pregnancy. You know, I was so dedicated to my business. We weren't even together all that long. I said, there's just no way. I can't give up my business right now. Like, it's just starting to get traction. By this time I must have been 4 years into it or 3 years into it. I can't remember. It was 2014 that Aria was born. And so it must have been 3 years. And I was just like, there's just no way. That wasn't part of my plan. That wasn't something I ever saw myself doing, was getting pregnant this early. And in fact, I was indifferent to getting pregnant altogether. Whether I had a kid or not didn't change my path. I just wasn't one of those women that really wanted to have kids. Scott, on the other hand, really did. So it worked out well for him, and yay for his swimmers. So it wasn't until I got into Caledonia, which was about a 20-minute drive, and I passed the Caledonia sign, the Welcome to Caledonia sign, and I said, I couldn't get a smile off my face, the idea of being pregnant. Never, ever thought that that would happen. Of course, I did the urine test at work, and it, you know, it says wait up to 5 minutes. My goodness, it was like 10 seconds, boom, you're pregnant. So that was that. So by the end of the week, I had our entire wedding planned. I had two locations that we had a date booked to go check out and see. And I basically told Scott, this is when we're getting married. He was just like, okay. So he didn't even propose. I didn't even have a ring or anything until about a month after all of this went down. And by that time, we had basically told people, you know, we'd like to invite you to our wedding, and P.S. we're pregnant. That's basically how that all went down. I was 5 months pregnant walking down the aisle, and it was in our wedding cake that we did the gender reveal, because it just fell a couple days after our 20-week ultrasound when we found out that we were having a girl. And so we decided, what a better opportunity to do that than to put it in our wedding cake. So everybody found out that it was a girl at the same time that we did. And that's probably one of my favorite wedding pictures that I have, is right as Scott's cutting the cake. You can see me kind of putting my hands next to my eyes and being afraid to look. And he has a big smile on his face. And of course, the little schnook, he like tilted the knife so he could see what color the cake was before I could. And that pretty much started, you know, the whole entry into mommyhood for me, and becoming a mompreneur and balancing my business with family life. And that was definitely something I had to wrap my mind around. And I'm one of those people that if you were to interview me and say, how was that for you? How was the first couple of months for you? Now that I've had Brooklyn, our second one, it's amazing how I go back and remember what it was like with Aria. And I did not bond with her at all for the first 8 months. I remember telling my husband, you know, having an infant absolutely sucks. Like, this sucks. I had been totally independent. Nobody was depending on me at this time. I was totally invested in my business, and I was working 6 days a week. And the fact that I now had to feel like I had to give that up a little bit was not comforting for me, because it goes from being completely independent to one day later having a child who isn't sleeping, who needs you to feed it, who needs you to care for it, and you're going through all the hormones and healing for the first time after having a baby. And it's a huge, overwhelming struggle, and I did not enjoy it. I didn't want to breastfeed her. That did not connect with me. I didn't feel like that was helping me bond with her. So we pumped as much as we could. I did the domperidone. I did the fenugreek. I did everything I could. And of course, you know, they always say that the pump is never as good as the baby. But for me, it was more of a stressor to have her try to breastfeed. And I had all these people telling me what I needed to do that I just said, you know what? Screw it. Like, after 2 weeks, I said, we're just going to bottle feed her. And for me, and for my practice, that was probably the best decision that I could have made, because that allowed Scott to get up and feed her sometimes. That allowed us to drop her off at the grandparents' house for a sleepover so we could catch up on sleep, because other people could feed her, other people could take care of her. And that was, you know, exactly what we did with Brooklyn as well. Is we didn't even try breastfeeding, because I just knew for me that just wasn't going to work. And I say that, and I'm sure there's some people that are very convicted towards breastfeeding, and it doesn't have to be that way. And I'm very much a pro-choice when it comes to breastfeeding. But to balance my work, to balance my sanity, to balance my life, that was one of the sacrifices that I made, was relinquishing that that control to other people, that bonding, those bonding periods with Ari to other people, because it just wasn't working for me. And I think had I kept going, had I kept trying, it probably never would have worked out anyway, because I would have been so stressed out and, you know, so overwhelmed that I needed to just not be that all-encompassing mother. And becoming comfortable with that and becoming comfortable saying these things to the population took me a really long time, especially coming from a naturopathic community. And I've seen the mommy groups, and everyone's like, you know, I really want to do this, and I really want to do things, everything. I want to do everything all natural. I want to be like the best mom. And you know what? Like, you just have to survive it. You just have to survive being a new mother for the first time. You have to give up certain things and be comfortable with that. You have to realize that you're not going to be able to do everything the way you planned it. And that's why even having a birth plan was not something I wanted, because I didn't want to become committed to an idea of what had to happen, knowing that life will never work the way that you want it to. So I brought on Michelle Paris to talk with us, and we had a very just open and honest conversation about what her life was like raising kids and being a mompreneur, and what my life was like being a mompreneur. And I really encourage this conversation to start to happen amongst our community without shaming. So the biggest one that I see that always comes up is, if somebody wants to formula feed their kid, don't make them feel bad about it. They need to feed their child. Their job as a mom is to keep their kid alive. So I'm sorry, if people can't afford goat formula, they're going to feed them Enfamil or Good Start or something like that, if that's what it takes for them to regain their sanity and not start to really resent being a parent and keep their child thriving, then that's what they're going to do. I don't really agree with people reaching out, especially in our community, saying, you know, this is an option or this is what somebody wants to do, and then everyone just jumping down their throat saying, well, you have to keep them breastfeeding. They should go to this consultant and they should try this herb and they should do this and that or the other. You don't know what those people are going through. You don't know anything about their family dynamic. You don't know how much support they have. So we have to, I think, as a community, be a little bit more unopinionated, a little bit more open-minded when it comes to this world. And that also extends to people outside of entrepreneurship that don't get it when you take a 5-week and a 3-week mat leave. And they look at you funny like, well, don't you want to stay home with your kids for a year? Or don't you think that that's really important for your child for you to stay home with them? All of those statements are completely unfair. And when my patients would ask me that, because that's of course what came up during my first pregnancy, is they said, well, you know, that's really unfortunate that you're not breastfeeding or that you're not staying home with your daughter. I'm like, well, if you have, you know, $5,000 that you would like to give me so I can pay my bills, that would be amazing. And typically they're not going to do that. So that, you know, shuts them up pretty quick. So the whole point of this ramble is to kind of give you a background story into how I jumped into all of this. And also, again, to be a little bit more open-minded with people in our community and our patients about how they're raising their children in order to survive their world. Because nothing will rock your world faster than an infant that isn't sleeping or isn't eating well or isn't thriving. Or, you know, it's the mom becoming a parent, I think, is entering into a whole new world of shaming and judgment more than I ever suspected that it would. And a lot of that's internal. A lot of that is what we put on ourselves. And I don't think that that's necessarily important or something that we have to do. So for my women especially that are listening, you know, take it easy on yourself. Just understand what your limitations are, and it will be okay, regardless of how you decide to raise your family, or if you decide to become a full-time mom and, you know, totally scrap the idea of running a practice, that's okay too. The other thing I've seen is, well, I can't believe that you're doing all of this and you have kids and I just can't seem to do even one of those things. That's okay. You know, you don't know my life situation. You don't know that we have grandparents within 20 minutes, all 4 sets of grandparents within 20 minutes of our house. You know, we have tons of support and help around us. So, you know, you don't ever have to be comparing yourself to others or what they're able to accomplish or not accomplish. This is your story. And that's why I brought Michelle on to kind of talk about her story. So here we go. Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show. We were just briefly talking before we jumped on this interview, and I was saying, you know, when I first started and I was learning about branding and learning about how to run a practice, I remember coming across you as Dr. Mom and seeing you with like meetup groups and mom groups, and I was like, man, this girl really knows what she's doing. So I'm so thrilled to have you on the show, and I can't wait for you to share kind of your background in how you fell upon this way of branding yourself. And then, of course, and most importantly, we're going to talk about how to balance babies and business.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited. Like I said to you, I've become obsessed with the podcast world. So this is a huge honor and a privilege. So thanks for having me.
Sure. So why don't we talk about how things started? Now,
sure.
You had mentioned briefly again before we jumped on the show that your growth with regards to your practice isn't, you know, what everybody would anticipate that you would have had. So most people see successful clinicians and they're like, oh man, you must have like just killed it from the very beginning. But that necessarily wasn't the case for you. So walk us through kind of how your business has grown from the beginning.
Yeah. So I started practice about 8 years ago and I joined a clinic. So I became, I took over an existing practice from a naturopathic doctor and I saw it as a wonderful opportunity as she wasn't selling it. She was handing it over. So she was newly pregnant and she wanted to focus on her Georgetown practice. And I was really excited to be somewhere where there already was some knowledge about what naturopathic medicine was. And that was a wonderful opportunity because I didn't start with nothing. There was action happening, which was I was really grateful for. But also she took a mat leave and I had the opportunity to take her Georgetown practice as well. So from the start, I just wanted to work and hustle and practice, but in a safe environment, in the sense that I wasn't starting my own practice and also learning the business side. I just really wanted to hone my naturopathic skills first and evolve from there.
Cool. So yeah. Go mm-hmm. ahead. Sorry.
No, I probably should continue. So that grew. And then very, very early on, I got pregnant and wanted to also focus on being a mother. So I took a 6-month mat leave the first time and the second time only a 2-month mat leave because it's just the nature of our business. And I just continued to grow my practice inside a integrative clinic and eventually just recently opened my own practice where I have the opportunity to grow in other realms, which I'm really, really pumped about. But the doctor mom started when I myself became a mom and thinking about how can I use this because I absolutely love working with moms and babies and how can I grow my practice this way? And so literally from a Google search or a GoDaddy search, me and my brother and I found that drmom.com was available and then Dr. Mom ND was available. So I purchased those domain names and started a blog.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it was birthed really.
Which is so amazing. And it's so funny how like things that you just think are so like how has this domain not been taken?
I was shocked.
Yeah. But it means that it was supposed to be for you, right? Like it could have even been taken and the person just didn't want to renew it. And now you have it and you're doing fantastic. And what I want to talk about now is how, so this is tough, right? We're in an industry that is predominantly female based. And unfortunately, women are the gender that tend to give birth to the babies, right? So we have this struggle of how do I balance mommyhood with being an entrepreneur and from an evolutionary perspective, women are supposed to, you know, as soon as you pop out the babies, you're supposed to be completely maternal and stay at home for the first year, which we are so lucky to have in Canada because it's not that way in the States and I don't know other countries. And this whole idea of women working when we have babies just wasn't the norm. And now it so is. And this is really what I want to talk to you about is when you got pregnant, you know, kind of what were the thoughts and the fears that kind of entered into your head when you're like, oh, goodness, like, how am I going to do this now?
Yeah, I'll be honest. The first time I almost felt resentment for being self-employed because I knew I wasn't going to have that first 12 months with my son that I wanted so badly. So I really aligned myself with friends and colleagues who were so willing to take my mat leave and be very flexible with my schedule and allow me the time home that I wanted. And because I didn't have children my first time around, I saved up a lot of money so that I could, or as much money as I could, to allow myself to be home. And I'm very grateful, but I have a very supportive partner who shared those paternity leaves with me. So my first time, my husband took the second 6 months, and the second time he actually took an 11-month pat leave.
Wow.
So I know, it was absolutely incredible. So we had this, and we actually learned that if I went to work, was able to make virtually the same amount of money in compressed hours. We had so much more family time together doing it that way. So it just was, it just served us, and it served my business. I really was able to continue to build a practice that I really loved, but also have an abundance of time with my family. And it really was because we had a tribe, and community was so very important to me. We had family around, and I asked for help when I needed, and really I had a great partner to allow me to do that. But it's an ongoing juggle. And I, like I said, it was a slow, steady growth in the sense that, you know, I've always been very clear with my family that ultimately, as much as I love what I do and I love growing a business, I do, that gives me so much joy and excitement, I'm family first, because at the end of the day, that's what I want to be most proud of. So, and I don't want to have regrets about that. So I let it grow the way I felt was like the right way. It had its bumps. Like I had postpartum anxiety juggling that. It certainly wasn't, you know, an easy thing right from the start, but mm-hmm. it was this constant interplay talking with my husband. How do we do this? How do we grow? So it was comfortable for everybody. And, you know, I feel like we were able to do that as much as possible. And now that both of my kids are about to enter school full time, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity to birth my own business, which is like my new baby. So it's very exciting.
Right.
But it is.
Congrats.
Now I have, thank you so much. And now I have a 6-year-old who, you know, is cognizant enough of those changes and new work hours. And I was just saying to him in the car yesterday, like, you know, he was like, why did you open this practice if you're away more? And it's like, well, that's a really great question. You know, like the ultimate goal is to build something so I can be home more, so that we can find this lovely flexibility of career pursuit and being a really great mom. And what I learned from my mat leaves is that I actually was a far better mother and spouse when I actually got to go to work and do something that fueled my soul. It really reset me. It was amazing.
I think I have to 100% agree with you about that, because that, you know, I took much shorter mat leaves than you did. And a lot of that was, number one, you know, financial need, because mm-hmm. I didn't have that much saved up for either pregnancy. And number two, it did give me that sense of independence. And I really needed that to step away from the chaos, especially with the first one. I don't know how it was for you, but it took me probably 8 months to really start bonding with Aria, because it just threw me completely in a 180 degree direction that I wasn't expecting. I was completely independent, doing my own thing, just killing it. And then all of a sudden I had this human that was totally dependent on me, and I'm not that type of a person, right? So that was getting used to that idea, and the sleep deprivation was insane. Like I would wake up and frantically look for Aria in my bed, and my husband would be like, what's wrong? Like Aria's in her crib. And I'm just like, no, she's in the bed. Like we have to find her.
I actually did that too. That's very funny that you said that. I would search for babies for whatever reason. The sleep deprivation was, I mean, that's really ultimately what caused postpartum anxiety for me too. So
no doubt.
Yeah.
And so this is the other part of it too, right? You know, I find we have this struggle of now the mom guilt comes in. So we're starting to go back to work. We're leaving our children at home with whoever's taking care of them. How did you approach that? So for me, as we were saying, like having that separation from my family and the chaos and doing my own thing and talking to adults was huge for me, for my mental state, and for everybody else. But did you fight with that internal guilt of doing that, of leaving after 6 months, your family and your son at that time, that so many of us do experience?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I almost feel like I have guilt for not having that guilt. I know I've had it. And I really know that first return to my return from my first mat leave was really difficult for me. And I know I felt really guilty, and I know I felt really pulled in so many different directions. And I remember pumping in between patients and sweating, and just, it was a lot to take on. And I know it wasn't all easy, but when I saw how good my husband was at home, and he really thrived there, and I really thrived working and coming home, I felt at peace with that. I don't think everyone gets to have their spouse be the alternative care when they do return to work. I did. So that really gave me peace of mind. Of course, we do things differently. So it's not, it didn't have its stresses. It wasn't without its stresses.
Right.
You know, learning to yield, to let someone else virtually make decisions because you're not present to make them. But I felt less guilty because at least my children were with their dad, who was tremendous at home. I almost felt jealous because he had, at that time, he had a great job where he was encouraged to have a pat leave, and he could literally leave, park his work. He didn't have to think about it for those months. Even when I was home, I was ordering supplements, I was checking in, I was reading emails. I never got to be just totally present as a mom. So he was probably doing it better than I could, because I always had my mind was in so many different places, where he literally was like dancing with the kids, or, you know, playing whatever. I mean, he really is a big kid at heart. So that gave me peace of mind. So I had less mom guilt. I did, for sure.
And you know what? That's such a valid point. And you're bringing up, now I'm flooding back to when I was home. And I remember some of the blogs that I wrote for my website and for other websites, I was doing at 3 a.m. when like Aria had just finished feeding, she was down and I was awake. And that was the one thing that I found very, very stressful. And that was one thing that I resented towards other moms that weren't entrepreneurial, is I was like, you know what, if I could just stay home and focus on the kids, I would enjoy this so much more. I felt that I would have bonded faster with my girls. With Brooklyn, it was much better because I had already gotten through all the first major stressors. But right. I do recall that. And I think that's something that has to be acknowledged as well, to the women and men that take time off, is unfortunately, you can't take a break from keeping your business alive, because that's the big fear that I think a lot of us have, is we've spent however many months or years building up our practice. We have to step away for at least a month or two, at least after we have a baby, but you can't just walk away from your business. You know, that is something that has to keep thriving. So in that first 6 months, how did that look for you? Like how were you continuing to build and continue to keep your practice running while you're away for that length of time? Because 6 months is a long time to be away.
It was a really long time. It was a really long time. I had an amazing associate there. So it was someone I graduated with, and she was willing to step in, and she's so wonderful and was able to keep that momentum going because of who she is. And I did the back end side of things. So I ordered the supplements. I sort of managed emails if they were needed, and passed them on if I needed Sarah to take them. And I think a critical, huge turning point and learning lesson for me is that when I stepped back in and I eased back into my practice, I literally made the same amount of money. So I was way overextending myself in the beginning, and hours of availability. When I compressed them and everyone just fit into them because that was their only option, and then I could go home and be a mom and then compress my workday and go and be feel valuable and building my career, it so worked for me. I absolutely, that was a turning point. Like, I will never work those extended hours again and have gaps in my day. So that was really, that is how I juggled. I compressed hours, I worked, and I was really present with my work when I was there. And then when I was home, I would, do the best I could with being present with my family. And then when it was bedtime, then I continued to hustle. I would think about blog posts. I would connect. I spent a lot of time reaching out to companies and existing blogs and writing them saying I wanted to contribute. And I was thinking about all of this when you asked me to do this, and you just mentioning it, like, I remember waking up in the middle of the night thinking of blog articles and needing to either write it down or actually put them out there. So there, you know, it became a total obsession that way. But yeah, I don't know. I think juggling and figuring that out is just, it's a continual process.
And how you set it up is exactly what I did too. So I was working 6 days a week while pregnant and having major gaps and not being productive and not getting things done because patients, I would just say, come in whenever. And when I came back from mat leave, I said, okay, you know, things have obviously got to change, and went down to 4 days per week and compressed all of those patients into a smaller period of time. And it was the exact same thing for me. My income did not change. And I was like, man, like, I wish I had done this sooner. But totally. It's hard, right? And I felt I needed to use the mat leave as an excuse to block off my schedule that way. And it's really hard when you don't have, quote unquote, a good excuse to do that for your patients, because we always think about our patients first and their schedule first. And now that I've restructured everything, I will even on that day say, oh, I have a 1 hour gap. Let's call all those patients that are booked in later and see if they can come in sooner, because I want to get out of here faster so I can be home to my kids. Like, there's no reason why anybody who's listening, whether you have kids or not, whether you have blocked off your schedule properly or not, whether you're just out or you've been out for a couple of years, it's going to be more valuable to your patients. It's going to be more valuable to your business for you to start really being very protective of your time and compartmentalizing your time. Because if you're constantly, you know, seeing a patient, you have a 15-minute gap, you want to send a Facebook post at that time, and then you have a new patient, you're just not going to be nearly as effective, as clear-minded, and as focused as when you start blocking those hours out and allowing yourself, when you are at home or with your spouse, to be with them 100% because you blocked off enough time during your working days to get all of your other shit done. Is that, you know, it makes a huge difference, and it makes you a better spouse, it makes you a better doctor, and of course a better mother. And that should help to eliminate some of that guilt too.
Yeah. I feel like that's something I still work towards. It's just like, you probably felt the same way, but once you become a mother, you're like, what was I doing with my time before this? Like, what I could accomplish 5 minutes during naps or 20 minutes was unbelievable after having a child. So I really learned the value of time. And that was a good lesson I learned from my family. And that's the same thing with opening a practice. I literally thought, what was I doing with my time before this? Like, I just, you know, you hustle. It was helpful for me to learn how to manage my time. And I'm continually learning to get better at that so that I can continue to grow without burning myself out.
And so this is actually like the coolest part of the story, I think, is, you know, you kept your business running the way it needed to. It helped pay the bills. You didn't overextend yourself. And now that the kids are old enough to be in school, you're starting to take the reins back a little bit more, and you've reignited that entrepreneurial fire. And I think that is also something so important for everyone who's listening to remember is, you know, just because for the next 4 to 6 years or however the space is for your family, just because during that time you're maybe not hustling as hard, you're not working as hard as other people appear to be working, your time will come. And this is your time now, Michelle. Like, this is when you're, you know, taking back what you originally wanted for yourself. And I think that's a fabulous thing.
You know, thank you. Yeah. And it really, we had to constantly remind each other, my husband and I, through that process, like, there's a time and a place, but we want to be really proud of our priorities during this time. They are our priority. We're happy to be home. Yes, it's slower in certain areas, and it still grew. I mean, I still grew a practice. It's not like it was majorly slow. It's just, you couldn't do everything you wanted because there were other priorities. And I'm really proud that we kind of preserved that. And then it was really like this acknowledgement, like, yeah, it's time. We're ready to do this. And it's okay to, you know, now grow something else and fuel something else. And, you know, we're really honest with our kids, and I can have really great conversations with them and keep them part of the process so they know what I'm doing. And I think that really helps too. And I'm proud that they get to see me as a working mom. So.
Totally. Yeah, that was my biggest thing. Is I was like, you know what? Even when I went back to work right away, I said, these girls are going to see what it's like to have a strong, kick-ass mom who's like killing it, doing what she wants, fulfilling her dreams, and still raising us right, you know, being there for us, putting us to bed every night, not yelling, not being stressed out.
Right.
Because I could definitely feel when I wasn't taking care of myself, when I wasn't getting enough sleep, when I was putting too much emphasis on trying to do everything, I was just awful. I just became an absolute bitch, if I can say that. And it was not helpful for anybody. So the final questions that I kind of want to ask you, Michelle, is knowing that, I mean, we all have friends, we have colleagues in this industry. What are some of the pitfalls or the concerns that you hear from other entrepreneurial moms that you find, you know, I hear this and this is what I think, or I wish there wasn't so much of this talk. What are some of the observations that you've made?
Can you reframe that a little
bit?
I don't know. Yeah.
So following even in Facebook feeds and things, I'll typically always see, you know, mom guilt will come up. How do you get it all done? Just other fears or worries that moms typically have, or maybe even for the people that are listening that don't have kids yet and have fears around, well, what am I going to do with my business when I do? Do you have any final insights or words of wisdom for any of those people?
Okay, I get what you're saying. I think when we tune in, and I think motherhood is the most perfect opportunity to reignite with your intuition and listen to, you know, what you really value. If you tune in and constantly go towards the most, you know, enjoyable path or path that gives you, you know, glimmers of joy, because it's not all going to be perfect. You know, slowly you'll be able to build a life that works for you in whatever capacity. I think my whole next journey in working with moms is going to be starting to trust our intuition more, advocating for ourselves, and just continually trying to build something that we're proud of. You know, feedback that I get from other ending moms, and I'm tremendously proud of this feedback, is that women who maybe haven't thought that they would want to be a mother because they weren't sure of how they would juggle that, that the way that I'm doing it, how I haven't lost myself in this process, has inspired them to be more open to that. And that has been one of the coolest things I've been told, and I wear as a very, you know, great badge of joy or pride, because I like that that's the message I'm sending.
Yeah.
I like that people feel like I haven't lost myself along the way, that I really still was able to build my own career and still fuel myself. I do make myself a priority for sure, but also really enjoy being a mom and a wife and, you know, a homemaker as much as, you know, yeah. probably not the best at that, but
yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It just, it takes time and you have to be gentle, so gentle with yourself because, it's not, it's so easy to feel guilty and it's so easy to make other your littles a priority because they are all encompassing and demanding. But I think once I learned that very valuable lesson of when I took care of myself or I did something that made me feel good or proud of myself, I came home refreshed and I was a much better mom and I was way more responsive to their needs and I was way more connected to them when I honored myself. And that is literally what I hoped that people would get from this podcast and what I hope my patients learn from me, because that's really very valuable to me.
Love it. And thank you so much for being so open and honest about your journey. And yeah. if people do want to get in touch with you a little bit further, what are some of the best ways that they can do that?
So you can find me on, well, pretty much every Dr. Mom ND. It's my website, drmomnd.ca or my Oakville ND. Instagram, I'm Dr. Mom ND, Facebook, and Twitter as well.
Awesome. Thank you yeah. so much again, Michelle. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Andrea.
So the final thing, the only thing that I'm going to leave you guys with is take care of yourself. Put yourself first. Don't get lost into the ideals or the idea of what a mom should look like. I am thrilled that I've been able to maintain my own independence and still be a great wife and a great parent to my girls because I made me a priority. And when it comes to my husband, God love him, when I see his numerous Tim Hortons cups all around my house on a consistent basis, or the clothes that are on the stairs that have never been picked up, or the laundry that hasn't been done, or the insane amounts of dog hair that have yet to be swept up or vacuumed. The other big thing that I promised myself was I was never going to become a maid because I'm running a business, he's running a business, I'm a parent, he's a parent. I am not the housekeeper alone. So this is another big thing when it comes to your partner or your spouse or whoever it is that you're living with, that as a female, I find from just our nature, we think about everything all at once. We see all the little things that need to be tied in and cleaned up. I just don't think that men do, and that's okay. But I also promised myself that I wasn't going to fall into that role of doing everything. So balancing everything all the time. So there's been times where I've seen Scott will take the garbage out, like the garbage out of the garbage bag, and he won't replace it with a liner, like a new garbage bag. And I refuse to do it for him. Or he will leave his dishes in the sink, and he knows that most of the time I'll put them away or put them in the dishwasher. And I will, you know, put my foot down and I will refuse to do them. And I will keep saying, those are dishes that need to be done. I have had to, you know, use the other sink to wash the other dishes. And he'll say, well, why don't you just do those ones? I'll say, because those are your dishes. Or with the garbage example, I've been having to use the other garbage and it's starting to fill up. He's like, well, why didn't you just put a new liner in? I said, because you took the garbage out. You can start putting the liner in. It's about being very firm with how far you'll go. Because for me, as soon as I start falling into that trap of now becoming a maid and a mom and a business owner and trying to be a good wife, I really start becoming a version of myself that I do not like, that I do not want around my family, because I become resentful. And the second we start becoming resentful, the second all relationships start to fail. I saw a really great Facebook post and it was all about what actually breaks up relationships. And it's the idea of missed expectations. So you're expecting that your spouse will have made dinner by the time you come home. When you come home, there's no dinner. You get upset. You're expecting your partner to have had all the kids home, washed, and ready for bed by the time you come home because it's past 8 o'clock, and they're still up and running about and playing with toys. It's the expectation that your partner is going to have flowers for you or do kind things for you or have a present for you, and that doesn't happen and you become upset. This is also another big thing that I find really works for me in my marriage, is to get rid of a lot of those expectations that I have of him. There's certain things that I certainly want him to do because he's an adult, and I expect that to be done because he's an adult and because he's capable. But when it comes to the little things, like, I know if I were in his shoes, I most likely wouldn't have had all the dishes washed. I most likely wouldn't have had dinner ready because I was working late too and watching the kids by myself. So I think a lot of that comes down to the balance of everything that it is that we're doing and all the balls that are up in the air. But it's also incredibly important, and this is the last thing I will say, is understanding where, again, your limits are and holding incredibly firm to them and not letting those limits get wavered by anything or anybody. So if you know that there's a limit, that if you start crossing it, you start to become resentful and angry and stressed out, find as many flags that you can that are showing you you're starting to get there and stop it before you go over the edge. It's incredibly important for you to do that, to recognize when your emotional, when your psyche, when everything about you starts to change in a negative way, so that you can prevent that from happening. And in doing so, it'll make you a better spouse, it'll make you a better parent, and it'll make you a better practitioner for your patients. And these are all the things that you can relay to any patient that you know is going through the exact same thing. Because you've gone through it, you've recognized it, you've tested these things, and you've seen how they've worked or not worked. So please, please, please take care of yourself, hold strong, and I can't wait to hear from you about how this podcast resonated with you in any direction, good or bad. Okay, so get in touch with me about this or leave comments in the show notes on the blog on maximizebusiness.ca. I'm Andrea Maxim, your number one fan, your biggest supporter. You know, use me as a sounding board if you need to. You know I love you guys, and I'm out. You guys are killer. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Profitable Practice Podcast. Leave me a comment, and if you haven't already, I would love a review in iTunes. Definitely subscribe to this podcast and leave me a quick review. For those ready to maximize your practice, contact me at www.maximizedbusiness.ca.